as we know, things have kind of started to take a turn here. And, of course, we've been continuing on the study of the life of Joseph. And particular today, the thought that we're focusing in on is that your sin will find you out. Your sin will find you out. We'll make reference more here in just a little bit. But, you know, the Bible says in Numbers 32:23, be sure that your sin will find you out. Okay? And so here we're looking at not as much this part in Joseph's life, but how many of you remember what happened to Joseph with his brothers? Who remembers some of the things that happened? They sold him into slavery. That's true. What else did they do to him? And what else did they do to their father? Does anybody remember that? How mean and how cruel that was, Connor? They made his father think that he's died and actually went to the point to, remember they took his coat and killed a goat and dipped it in the blood from the goat and showed it to his father to make his father to actually deceive him. So not only did they sell him into slavery, but they went as far as to actually deceive his father to make it believe that he had been killed. And so they had done some pretty ugly things. And up until this point, we haven't really heard much else about his brothers or his father, Jacob. Up until this point, it's been mostly we've been talking about Joseph himself and the things that he was dealing with, the things that he was experiencing there as he was sold into slavery, ended up in Potiphar's house, ended up in prison. And now he is where? Where is he at now? Where is he at now? He's the number two man. He became vice president, didn't he, Chuck? All the way from prison to vice president of Egypt, if you want to call it that way. Pharaoh literally said, you're number two in the land. So that's where he's at now. And now, of course, things have changed. He's overseen this project of the growing of the corn, the storing of the corn, and even now the distribution and sale of the corn. Now, understand that this was not an easy task. Can you imagine the whole process of making sure enough corn was planted, making sure that it was harvested, making sure that it was stored properly so it would keep, making sure that they saved a certain part of it for the time of famine, and then now overseeing distribution, overseeing really, in many ways you could argue this was a worldwide economy at this point, because in this region, a lot of other people didn't save up corn. They didn't plan for the famine, but God used Joseph to spare a lot of people through this. So he's overseeing this, the distribution. So it's a big project. It's a lot of work. It's a lot for one man to oversee. But nevertheless, Pharaoh has put him in charge of this particular project. Now, one thing that I want to mention here is just a thought that God was using the famine to deepen not only an awareness of physical need, but a spiritual need as well. Now, let me just say this before we move on. What I'm saying is that sometimes famines happen in your life, if you will, spiritual famines. And, you know, times where it seems like things are not progressing very well. It's times where things, it seems like things are not going very well. And God uses those times in our lives to not just deepen a physical awareness. Often it's not even a physical awareness as much as a spiritual awareness. Now, in this case, obviously there was a physical awareness that they needed to be by physically storing and saving so they would have enough to be fed in the future. So there was an obvious need for that. But I believe that God was also using a spiritual need. And the principle that we can learn from that is that when it seems like we're in these places in our lives, obviously the best thing to do is turn back to the Lord and see what it is that the Lord is trying to use us or teach us through. Now, the couple things that we're going to talk about, first of all, let's go back, and we mentioned the denial and the deception that had happened. Now, first of all, let's go back into chapter 42. Back in chapter 42, verses 7 through 11. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but he made himself stranger to them, and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, whence come ye? And he said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew him not. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them. And they said unto him, ye are spies, to see the nakedness of the land, ye are come. And he said unto them, nay, my lord, but to buy food, we are servants to come. Or we are thy servants come. We are all one man's sons, and true men, the servants, are no spies. So here they show up in verses 7 through 11. And Joseph recognizes them right away, and he even asks a couple of questions to confirm who they are, okay? To confirm who they are. And they say that we are true men, and that's an interesting statement. We are true men. Would you agree that they are true men? By his brother saying that, who would agree with that? Now, that's what they said. That's what the Bible tells us that they said. But do you actually agree with the belief that they were true men? After all the denial and deception, what would you think? Do you think that they're actually true men? Will, what do you think, brother? In some ways they were, I guess. In some ways probably not. Yeah, in some ways. So in that point, yeah, they were. They were really there trying to get, they were, in other words, they weren't spies. Okay? Exactly. They weren't spies in that particular moment because they were trying to get corn. But what about on the inside? What about their heart? Because always remember, we've talked about this a lot lately, that it's always a heart issue. Now, you can look good on the outside. You can dress right. You can put a smile on your face. You can do everything right. But God's concerned, obviously, about the matters of the heart. Okay? It's a good question, you know, because Jacob's sons, right? It's a good question, and then I think when you look back, a lot of it had to do with their jealousy, I believe, of Joseph, because Joseph obviously had blessed, or excuse me, God had blessed Joseph. You know, he was well-favored. Obviously, he had the ability to interpret dreams. That's why it was so evil and wicked. I mean, they went those far as to actually try to destroy him because of the blessings. The only thing that I can say is because of the blessings that God put on him. So they went through this, through this point. So they made that statement, we are true men, and I do find that to be an interesting statement because I believe it is valid what they were doing there. They actually were doing what they said that they were doing and that they were trying to get food and trying to get corn for their dad and their family, and that is true. But on the inside, I don't believe they were true. I believe that there was a lot of things wrong that were on the inside. And so, you know, it's one of those things. Let me share this thought with you, some of the notes here. It is true that we are quick to pronounce our own goodness, aren't we? We're always quick to say, hey, everything's good. Proverbs 26 says, most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness, but a faithful man, who can find? So that statement, again, we are true men, it's our nature to say, yeah, I'm a good person. And for the record, you know, society and the world basically teaches that man is basically good, but actually the Bible teaches that man is basically bad because we are born sinners without Christ. There is none that doeth good, no, not one, according to the Bible, and the only good in us is through the Lord Jesus Christ, okay? So they said we are true men, but yet Proverbs says most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness. So that's an interesting observation there. What Joseph's brothers now needed was an opportunity to truly face themselves for who they really were instead of who they thought themselves to be. The boldly proclaimed statement that they were true men, yet nothing could be further from the actual truth. So part of what I think we're seeing here is that they don't even realize it yet, but there's a reality check about to set in here. They're about to go back and face really the choices. Yeah, go ahead, Brother Will. I don't know. You know, you got to think, though, when they sold him, he was a young boy. Maybe he had facial hair now. Maybe he was dressed like an Egyptian. So, and a lot of Egyptians did wear the makeup. I don't know why. I'm glad I was. And you know, Will, it's funny that you say that. Let me tell you what happened the other day. Earlier this week, I went to Walmart. Did you see that? Okay, so you know where I'm going with this. She recognized me. I didn't know her because I was a baby. I was little, okay? But she recognized me. So what happened was this week I went to Walmart to get a couple of things before work, and there was a lady who I literally had not seen since I was a little boy. She actually took care of me when I was a little boy. She's one of my aunts in our family. She's technically by law, she's not, but that's not the way we look at it. She was married to my uncle Gregorio Siqueiros in California, and so she was part of the Siqueiros side of my family. Well, she seen me at Walmart, and she came up to me and she said, what's your name? So I said, I'm Jaime Siqueiros. She said, Jose Luis Siqueiros is your dad, Amelia is your mom. I'm like, yeah, how did you know that? And she said, well, I used to take, and then she told me who she was, and I knew who she was. So I actually didn't remember her, Will, because I was a baby. I was little, so that's a little different. But she recognized me. Even as a grown, she said, you're a grown man now. And she recognized me. Go ahead, Chuck. Really? Joseph did recognize. I think he was a teenager, probably when they sold him, around the teen. Yeah, I'm sure he looked different. And I think it's that, and there's no way that their brother would be second in command in Egypt. There's no way. So there's no way they're thinking that, Chuck. Oh, like a reunion? Yearbook. Wow. Well, I don't know what to tell you about that, Chuck. But I understand. But nevertheless, they did not recognize him. Here they come with their brother, and they're being faced with a reality that they probably thought. I don't know what they thought about Joseph, honestly. I don't know what their logic of thinking was. I don't know if they thought that he was still a slave. I don't know if they thought he was still in jail. I don't know if they thought that he was killed. I have no idea. Go ahead, Will. Oh, I would say so. Yeah, because look at everything that he did. Look at all the planning. So we distribute to 95 to 100 families here. Can you imagine the logistical madness of growing corn and distributing to hundreds and probably thousands of people from different countries, different languages? Can you imagine organizing all that? You're right. Don't tell me that he was probably a pretty smart guy to be able to organize all that. But nevertheless, his brothers who didn't recognize him have now come full circle, and they don't even know, but they're about to be faced with a reality check right now. I mean, it's staring them in the face, literally staring them in the face, and they don't even know it. They don't even realize it, okay? Pretty much, yeah. So as we go along here, here's another interesting example. Another thing about, you know, thinking everything's good. And this is just another story to illustrate in the Bible in Luke chapter 12, verses 17 through 20. What shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this I will do. I'll pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, listen to what he says. Soul, thou hast much good laid up for many years. Take thine ease and drink and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose those things shall be which thou hast provided. So, interesting there, again, the rich man thought, well, hey, I'm doing pretty good for myself, right? How many of you guys know people in the world that because they have a lot of financial success that they believe that they're doing pretty good for themselves, right? Yeah. And by the way, I'm not mad at somebody if they worked hard and they made a good living. But the problem is they get to their place where they think, A, they don't need God, or B, I have so much that I'm just going to keep getting more and more and more and more, instead of having the mindset, well, you know, I have all these good, like the rich young ruler here, I have so much that I'm going to have to tear down my barns and build bigger ones to store all my stuff, all everything that I have. Or another option could have been like, you know what, probably there's a lot of needy in the world. Probably there's those in need. How about I, instead of, you know, this overflow, this abundance that I have, how about I start distributing to the poor? How about I start giving to those in need? That could have been another option, but we don't see that. He's saying, hey, you're doing pretty good for yourself. Another idea here that our natural reaction is to always think that we're doing pretty good for ourselves. So that's what we're starting to see here as far as that goes. Now, so there's the denial. There's the deception of the brothers that we're talking about. Let's talk a little bit about the remembering and the remorse. Now, Joseph's brothers had been living, they thought, successfully by denying their past. You know, I think that they thought, hey, you ever known people thought, well, I'll just ignore it and I'll deal with it. I'll deny my past and it's just going to go away. Does it ever just go away? No, generally not. Now, that doesn't mean that God can't forgive. That doesn't mean that you can't make it right with the Lord. But by essentially, keep in mind, when you go to the Lord and ask God for forgiveness, you're actually dealing with it. Okay? You're asking the Lord to actually forgive you for something. And so that's actually dealing with it. As far as we know, we don't see anywhere where they actually try to make this thing right with the Lord. And so there's another reminder to us, folks. If, you know, I'm never bothered by someone's past as much as I am their current spiritual condition or the current condition of their heart. If something has happened, they ought to try to make that right with the Lord or make it right with people or whatever needs to be done. But if somebody just ignores it or continues to deny it, I've known people that have been caught literally red-handed and they still deny, deny, deny. Friend, there's something wrong with that. It needs to be dealt with. And at some point, you also got to think it's not just the initial sin, but there is a pride in not being able to admit that you did something wrong. Okay? Now, keep in mind, one of the things that the Bible teaches in the book of Proverbs that the Lord hates, one of those things is a lying tongue and a proud look. So, essentially, when somebody can't even come to the place to admit that they've done something wrong, they're still lying, and it's prideful to say, Chuck, if I offended you and I don't have enough character to come to you and say, Chuck, I'm sorry for offending you, then there's something wrong. Then I have some pride, too much pride, that I won't even come to you and say, Chuck, what I said to you or what I did to you was wrong. Will you forgive me? Right? There's something wrong with that. So up until this point, that's kind of the life that they have lived. In Genesis chapter 42, verse 13, let's go there to look at verse 13 and we see what's happening here. And they said, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in Canaan, or excuse me, the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. One is not. So an interesting statement here that it said that, hey, we're all brothers. We have the same dad. Our youngest brother is with our dad, but there's one that's not. Who do you think the one that's not they're talking about? Joseph. Okay? I think at this point, Joseph is actually asking some questions to kind of see where they're at. I think he's kind of feeling them out to see how they actually feel, what their lives have become, what kind of men that they've become. Do they show any kind of remorse for, you know, what they did to Joseph? Do they show anything else? Hold on a second. Dana's saying to switch to the lapel. I guess my sound. Hold on just a second. But I do. Gotcha. So, essentially, Joseph, I think, is feeling them out, seeing if there's any kind of remorse, seeing if they have any kind of concern for the past, anything that's happened. Okay? So, I believe that we see. Let's read on. Let's go down to verse number 17. And he put them all together in the ward 3 days. And Joseph said unto them the third day, this do and live, for I fear God. For if ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry on corn for the famine of your houses, but bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. And the one said to the other, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and he would not hear us. Therefore is the distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, doth not sin against the child, and you would hear, therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. So here they are, basically, Joseph is saying to prove yourself to see who you are, and, you know, go back and get your other brother, you know, one of you go back, get your other brother and prove to me who you are. And this whole time they're talking, of course, Joseph understands them. They don't realize that Joseph is able to understand them, but he does actually understand them, okay? So as we read on, down to verse number 26, and they laded their asses with the corn and departed thence, and one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender. In the end, he espied his money, for behold, it was in the sack's mouth. And he said unto his brethren, my money is restored, and lo, it is even in my sack. and their heart failed them, and they were afraid one another, what is this that God hath done unto us? And they came unto Jacob their father in the land of Canaan, and told him all that befell him, saying, the man who is lord of the land spake roughly to us, and took us for spies in the country. And we said unto him, we are true men, we are no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of our father, one is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. So they're telling the father's story. And the man, the lord of the country, said to him, whereby shall I know that these are true men? Leave one of your brethren here with me, and take food for your famine, and the household will be gone. And bring your youngest brethren to me, and then shall I know that you are no spies, but that you are true men, so I will deliver to you your brother, and you shall traffic in the land. And it came to pass as they emptied their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob their father said to him, me have you bewrayed my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, that you will take Benjamin away, and all these things are against me. And Reuben spake unto his father, saying, slay my two sons, if I bring them not thither, deliver them in my hand, and I will bring him into thee again. And he said, my son shall not go down to you, for his brother is dead and is left alone. If I miss him by the way in the which you go, then shall you bring me down in gray hair sorrow to the grave. So here there's obviously some concern there. There's some callousness, I think, also going on with their brothers. Upon Jacob, he returns, and they're given this report. Now that when the food run low, Joseph does not offer some useless pledges by offering his sons a pledge to Jacob. They could have done some things differently. They could have handled some things differently. But let me read some of the thoughts here. Judah, one of the brothers who had such counsels, lied to his father about the loss of his son, and had come to the place where willingly offers his own life to exchange for his son. What great progress was taking place in the lives of Joseph's brothers. So we do start to see some progress. Instead of telling the whole truth, he starts to offer to take the place of his son. Okay, but Joseph had been working to reveal the lawlessness that resided in their own hearts and the love that began to reside in his heart. So some things are starting to be revealed. We do see some progress. Not completely, but nevertheless, there's some things that are having to be dealt with here. Now, some would have thought that Joseph was cruel to his brothers by not revealing to himself who he was immediately upon their arrival. However, Joseph in his wisdom was doing something greater, of far importance. He was accomplishing something of far greater value. A more valuable reunion was what he wanted, and restoration. So, again, when you look at this story here, you think, well, Joseph was mean. The Bible says he spake roughly to them. He put him in this position to basically almost hold one of them hostage, one of the brothers hostage here. And you think, well, you know, Joseph's being mean and ugly. But actually, I believe that Joseph was actually trying to restore the fellowship. And that is another picture. Of course, we've been talking about Joseph being a picture of Christ. And that is another picture of Christ, is that he always desires restoration. God always wants to restore our fellowship with us. And so God, that's one of the things that Joseph was trying to do, was to actually restore the fellowship with his brothers. And so, again, what we're seeing here is that even during a famine, that God is actually using a famine to reunite a family. God is actually using a family or a famine to save a country and a nation who was not properly prepared for this. But nevertheless, we're starting to see, and we're going to talk more about it next week, how these things are coming full circle, and now his brothers are actually starting to have to deal with some of these things. But let me just give you this, and we'll finish up. I never think that spiritual famines are all bad. I realize that you feel like in a hopeless state, in a hopeless place, but keep in mind that maybe God is trying to do something through those situations. And even when you get to those places where you feel that way, just pray and seek the Lord on what God is trying to do, because we're already starting to see a couple things that the Lord was doing in this particular situation. All right, let's go ahead and stop there for now. Again, we're doing things kind of a little bit different because of recent sickness and things like that. Normally I'd get around in fellowship and shake hands with everybody, but we're just going to keep our social distance today. And then, of course, as we get into the service, we'll do the same thing. So let's have a word of prayer.